Namacharya Shla Haridas Thakur ki Prem se gho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivas Arigaur Bhakti Brindaki Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gohu Bhagina Shyamakunda Radha Kundigiri Govardhanaki Shri Vrindavan Dhamaki Shri Mayapur Dhamaki Ganga Mayaki Jamuna Mayaki Bhakti Deviki Tulasi Deviki Samaveta Bhakti Brindaki Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we had a presentation today, or?
We would have a presentation, but Balaram is sick. He was the man.
Okay, and he's not here. Okay, so do we have the questions then?
Questions from whichever presenters want to present, and also in case any of them are here, maybe there's no one, so we have to check if everyone else is here, and then we should leave.
Then after that, there's someone maybe, if there's someone.
No, I think all of them are different, which I think. Leaves three questions open.
Yeah. Okay. So, first question here we have. Question. Krishna is a successful, quote unquote, male because he is detached from feminine beauty and its charms. How can we males in this world be good males and marriage? And manage our attachment to females. It seems that if you can play the male husband role well, then you don't need female company. Then why get married if you're happy and self-secure? Does this mean that all who choose to get married out of need will be necessarily flawed husbands? The material energy then functions in very similar to the spiritual energy because it's coming from Krishna. So you'll find that the elements of culture and everything like that, the knowledge of, is actually the same. Because technically, for the liberated devotees, they don't see a difference between the spiritual and material world. Just one is superior spiritual, one is inferior spiritual. Like you can tell the difference between gold and silver. One is superior, one's inferior. But they're all metal. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, it means one can understand it's actually the same. So then one can make these comparisons, Mother Yashoda deals like this is a mother, so this is the proper way for a mother to deal. But you always have to then also make the balance that we have to remember Krishna is the son of Mother Yashoda. Krishna is the husband, or the paramour of the gopis, and the husband of the queens. He is the friend. So the perfection of all those relationships come because Krishna is the center. Right? So there it works very nicely. Also, we have to be able to see in this, for application, the element of tattva and the element of rasa. Right? Because sometimes one is used to get an understanding, the other is applied, or vice versa. Does this make some sense? So Krishna is God, this, that, so he is the supreme, he is male because he is the source of everything. Everything else comes from him and is dependent upon him. So everything else is female. Right? So that's a principle. Right? So here we know everything didn't come from us. The male here cannot say it's all coming from me and all this and that. You know, technically he's female because he is also one of the things that have come from. Right? Does that make sense? So there's these elements. So you always have to balance these. In here, if we look at it, why what we're talking about is Krishna is detached because he is the source. He is not dependent. But he has expanded to increase ananda, right? The taste of interaction, personal interaction, this rasa. Means he is rasa, so when he interacts with himself, meaning him and his parts, then the rasa increases, right? He is atmarama, but atmarama means no interaction, right? This answers part of your question. But he expands to interact. Does that make some sense? Okay. So then, that element is then, and how does he interact? Right? He interacts according to the rasa of the devotee. Right? This is a very key point. Right? Because what if we look at it, yeah, so that means Mother Yashoda deals with him. He reacts as son. Here. Okay. Maharaj, can we just do one thing just for this moment here? Turn around. Here, stand here. See here? This is called a dhoti. Right? This is a yogi pata. Right? It means it's just you tie it like this. He hangs a little loose. Now, when he turns around, sometimes, depending on how long or short he wears a dhoti, it covers the back. Here you can see the kacha. But some people think he's dressing as a sannyasi because he's trying to get in the fast lane to get back in. No. He's very careful. He's a vanapra. He's happy. So it should be clear to everybody.
What's going on?
Have a seat.
What did he walk into here?
It's just something that needed to be explained. Like that. The discussion is about Krishna as male, and because he's detached from female, but in the material world, if the man wants to be successful, he needs to be detached, but then if he's detached, why would he get involved? So how do you make it work? You know, it's taking from that point how Krishna was detached from the queens and all that. He wasn't affected by their feminine charms. So how do you apply that here? So then the point is he interacts according to the other's interest. Does that make sense? So, and what is it that it's according to the other's interest? Because the other has the interest. Right? That means the feminine is the one with all the ideas and what they want to do. And the male is the one that interacts based on that. You understand? Because it doesn't matter if it's Cowherd Boy, his Mother Yashoda, it's Nanda Baba, they're all feminine because they're all energy. Right? There will be the overlap if there's a masculine manifestation of that energy, or there's the feminine aspect of the energy. Right? Just for rasa. But the main principle is there. So this is where the problem comes, is the male has his idea, and he's going to do what he wants to do. But that's feminine. And that's why the men run into problem, because the women want to do what they want to do, and the men's supposed to arrange that and support that. And then they're thinking, no, they should be doing what I did. I'm the man, I'm the this, I'm the that, I'm the so many things, and, you know, quote from Shastra, and so many wife following husband, you know, all these things.
But on rasa, it goes by the mood of what they're in. Mother Jashoda wants to feed Krishna, he eats. He wants to bathe him, he takes his bath. She's happy and laughing and joking, and they're saying, you know, clapping, and why don't you dance and everything like this. Like that, then this is all. And this is black pepper. Yes. This is black pepper that the Maharaj just took. It's a side point, side point, side point. See, what happened is, no, because the other day you took the black pepper, nobody knew it was black pepper, and then afterwards they saw you crying. So then some were worrying what it is that you were taking. So we were just letting them know, yeah, you know, if it was, you know, it's not ecstasy, it's not cocaine, yeah, no, it's black pepper because it wakes you up.
Black pepper is very important because it has the quality of akash. All other elements evolve from akash. So if you are trying to do real serious yoga, the goal is to live on just black pepper. Between 3 and 9 corns of black pepper a day, you get full.
And how many are you living off of here?
Well, I'm just starting this.
Oh. Okay, we'll work it out.
Yeah, okay, back to the point. So does this make sense? So what you have is you have two females fighting over who's going to be the predominant, right? And why are they fighting? Because in the material world, in the spiritual world, the feminine is only to please Krishna. But here it's not pure feminine. Because here, everybody thinks they're the man, right? That we're here to enjoy, to control and enjoy. So therefore, they have the plan, I want to do this, that, and that, and I'm going to try to arrange it. But at the same time, everyone else has to interact with what I want to do. So then, basically, you just get two men together who are two females, but then at the same time, supposedly they're male and female, but because it's not pure, it causes a problem. Right? So then the culture is here, is that the man is fixed because he means fixed. Krishna is fixed because he is the source. So what is the values, what is the environment that the family is going to grow up in? That is the husband. It's going to be what he provides. So therefore, that's there. Then within that, what are the needs of interaction? That is then goes off the other family members. The man comes home, the wife is happy, then he deals with that. He comes home, she's not happy, he deals with that. You know, he comes home, she's very serious and sober, he deals with that. Okay? So that's how it works. And if you come home, I'm going to come home, it was a bad day, and I expect the wife will do this, and the kids will do that. You get home, you're only going to get angry. Because it won't happen, you'll get frustrated, you'll get angry. Guaranteed. So that's the principle, is that applying this is there. It's just the way it works. Now, to do that, you need sense control, which means good brahmachari training, and you have to be sensitive, right? Krishna is the most sensitive, right? He understands everything. He's in every atom, between every atom, so he knows everything. He's the most sensitive, right? It's supposed to be the ladies are sensitive, but they're sensitive themselves. That's okay. Men are sensitive, but they have to be sensitive to the women. If they're sensitive themselves, then they're women themselves. Right? Woman means sensitive themselves. Man means sensitive to women. Does that make sense? So these are just technical things that we get from the philosophy, from the tattva, but that's why the culture is the way it is. That's why it's created. The Varnashram culture is created to, reflect or mimic that culture, because we're not actually male or female, you know? Because we're conditioned souls that are, you know, trying to fulfill desires. So this is how it works. Then if someone's able to do this, then the question becomes, why would he get involved? No, he's getting involved because he has the emotional need. He actually thinks that women are going to provide something for him in his life. And so because he feels that way, then he has to interact, and this is the way he has to interact. Since he is needing women, he has to act as a man. It's just the way it is. You know, it's just the way. So, therefore, that's why it's called a drama. Right? But the thing is we tend to see that it's a drama. Why should I get involved? Oh, it's not real. But what is real here? Right? That's one aspect. That's philosophy. Culture, if we look at it, who does not appreciate a well-performed drama. Right? Everybody, when you pay money to go watch an illusion, and the better the illusion, the better the actors can create the illusion that, yes, you know, this one's into Dumna, and this one is, you know, the Sabaras, and this one is this and that, and the whole interaction and Jagannath, then the more we appreciate. And if they don't do a good job, they just look like themselves and they don't project, then you think, this is a bad drama. Why I wasted my time. So that's the thing, is that you want to get involved, make it a good drama, and if it's a good drama, then you'll say, this was great. And then after saying this is great, then you can go, wow, this is as good as it gets, and then there's Krishna consciousness. Right? And then with in the beginning, one is very much into the drama, and oh, it's great, it's new, it's fresh, and then Krishna consciousness may take, but after a while you start to see, well, actually there's more substance than Krishna consciousness. That's called vanaprastha. Right? Brahmacharya is being trained how to be sense-controlled and be sensitive, right? To others, what's going on in others. Then Grihastha, then he gets involved in this and he performs his duties well. And ideally he keeps Krishna more in front, but if not, then whatever is to that degree, it gets eclipsed by this emotional interaction. His basis is always for that Krishna consciousness to come out, like Kardama. Right? He got into it because he knew he had these desires, but his purpose was to get out. Then, when it starts to balance, then one sees that actually it's a Krishna consciousness. Therefore, husband and wife are great friends that do Krishna conscious things together. It's not because it's male-female. It's because they're very close, intimate friends, and they know how to help each other be Krishna conscious. Right? So like this, it progresses. So, like that. Does that answer the question?
That was the answer to a question.
Yeah, that was the answer to. Of course, Krishna is a successful male because he's detached from feminine beauty and its charms. How can we males in this world be good males and manage an attachment to females?
The Yaksha, when he was asking the question to Maharaj, is who is this friend sent by destiny for man? And he said, the wife. But if he's not needed a wife, who's the friend of man?
God. Because he's everybody. It means you see in the what is it? In Prachina Barhishat, when he becomes, not Prachina Barhishat, what's it?
Paranjan
becomes a woman, then after the husband goes, then the Lord, Paramatma, comes outside as the Brahman. And he says, I am your friend. I've always been with you. And like that. So ultimately it's Krishna's the friend, because whatever we see is, whatever is that taste that we call wife or husband or child, that's actually Krishna. It comes through the body by the modes of nature and we identify it in that place. But because we have that conditioned need, therefore play the drama right, that will come through because it's Krishna coming through. But we don't understand it. But with time and knowledge and practice, you actually see it's actually Krishna. But that doesn't mean it's given up. Yes.
It's interesting. I know you make a comment. Sometimes we are confronted with this cleft between those who are renounced, Brahmachari, sannyasi, vanaprastha, like that, and those who are in Grihastha Ashram. I was just reflecting on this because you're saying so many things that apply to the relationship of men and women, but you yourself are sannyasi. So sometimes one hears that, what does a sannyasi really know about these things? He doesn't have the experience. But actually, Bhagavatam says that every one of us, because, first of all, I think Maharaj made this clear, those in female bodies are also thinking they're Purusha. They also want to enjoy. So all of us, despite the body, are in the same boat. We're actually female Prakriti, Para Prakriti, superior energy of the Lord. But we're thinking we're Purusha. So in one sense, you can understand why this is
why, it's often said that in spiritual life, it's more advantageous to be male. Because male means he stepped away just one step from Prakriti. His Prakriti. He openly, I'm Purusha. But female has taken two steps away. See, woman has taken a step away from the real Parakriti position to Purusha, and then taken another step back to be the false Prakriti, you see, that attracts the men who are thinking they are Purusha. So it's very interesting. I'm not saying, this is not necessarily applying to, because we're all spirit souls, so, but I'm saying you can see culturally, and you can see a lot of times practically, I've had women that they're quite honest about that. They feel handicapped in spiritual life. And this is why. Because of this. Their imitation Purusha, imitating to be on the basis of that, imitating to be Prakriti. Yeah. You see. That's one thing. So this relationship between male and female, it is something. It's just like, this comes to the next point. It is something that has to be understood through Shastra Shakshush, the eyes of Tattva, not through emotions. Because when one comes to the, Prabhupada says, the beginning stage of Krishna consciousness, this is in the fourth canto, it's very, very interesting. And we will be talking about this in our psychology lectures that will come up after this class is, Bhagavatam class is suspended for the festival time. Prabhupada says the first stage of Krishna consciousness or real spiritual progress, where one is actually in a transcendental position, is Vishuddha Sattva or Vasudeva Sattva. Now, at this stage, one is not having darshan of the spiritual world. One is not interacting with the Lord in bhav. One is not realizing his rasa. But what is one realizing? One has actually become chetra gya. One actually sees very clearly, because we are in first canto, so the earlier parts of the Bhagavatam, first canto slightly, second canto more, third canto more, are discussing sarga, the creation of the Lord, which is of 16 elements. Now, originally, these 16 elements are 16 shaktis of the Lord, and they all have names like Hri, Pushti, Tushti. They're all feminine shaktis of the Lord. So, they manifest as the 16 primal elements, which we're all having to deal with, like the 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, the 5 active senses, and then there's the objects of perception, you see, which are, in other words, also Mahabhutas, because we perceive elements, and our body is made of these 5 elements. So that's 15. And then the 16th one is the mind, and the mind is the chief. And mind, loosely, is subtle body. You can also divide that mind up into Ahankara and Buddhi too, and Manas as the emotional. The emotional center. Buddhi is the analytical part of the mind, and Ahankara is where our identity, what we think we are. But all of that together, very often you see in Prabhupada's books, he just calls it the mind, the whole thing. Because it's just, these really are just defining the different functions that go on within. Definitions, terms for the different functions that go on with the subtle body. Sometimes a ahankara comes out very strong, you see. When one takes a position, you can't do this to me, or I won't do this, or in a nice sense, I am very beautiful, or I am, you see. And other times the emotional aspect of the subtle body comes out foremost. The tasting. So that's what would be technically called manas. And then sometimes analysis, one is thinking deeply about philosophy analyzing mathematics, things like that. So that's the buddhi aspect. But just like you can't separate the three modes, it's also ultimately we can't really separate these three either, because they form together the subtle body, linga sharira. So it's important to note that these 16 are actually the real prakriti, the real feminine energy of the Lord, and originally spiritual. And in this body, we are dealing with them. This body, in the 11th canto, Prabhupada says the elements of the body, the elements of the creation, can be enumerated in different ways. Like in Bhagavad Gita, he speaks of 24. But often, you find, most often in Srimad Bhagavatam, 16 are talked about. Then in to Uddhava, he says, I also agree with those sages who say there's 9 and 5 and several other. So these enumerations are also not so important. So anyway, Bhagavatam says that every one of us, we are thinking we are Purusha. We're thinking we are male. And every one of us, no matter if you're man, woman, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, you have 11 wives. This is stated by the Bhagavatam. The 11 wives are 10 senses and one mind. And when one comes to the Vasudeva Sattva platform, one actually begins to really perceive this, because these are ultimately, as I said, energies of the Lord. One actually begins to perceive, because our real problem is that we are immersed in darkness. We're in ignorance. So we don't see what's happening. You see, suddenly we get some desire, we get some impulse, we become overwhelmed by the senses or the mind, and we don't see why this is happening. And we're bewildered and we become very fearful. Am I really a devotee? You know, when brahmacharis have trouble, they become fearful and start thinking, maybe I'm meant to be a grihastha or something like that. But really, all of this is going on inside under the cover of darkness. That's why Prabhupada said, you know, we talk of, Maharaj talks very often of varnashram dharma. And so someone asked Srila Prabhupada, how do we know what our varna is? And Prabhupada said, chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for a long time, become purified, and then your varna will become clear. This is Vasudeva Sattva. Because in Vasudeva Sattva, you actually see what your material nature, material constitution is, with complete clarity. That's called Chetra Gya. Chetra Gya is not just the ordinary jiva who's battling with his senses and mind and doesn't know it, because he's not Gya. He thinks he's the body. That's stupid. He thinks he's the mind. That's stupid. That's ignorance. Chetra Gya sees clearly that I am not these senses, and these sense objects will not give me satisfaction, and also I am not the mind. So then there's but the intelligence function of the mind is very important. This buddhi, Prabhupada said, is next to the soul, because it is through buddhi that, because Prabhupada said, obviously, I think everyone who's read Bhagavad Gita knows this about Krishna consciousness, means to come to the point of taking dictation from Paramatma. And this is actually one of the questions Vidura asks, later we'll see, in third canto of Maitreya Muni. So this is really an important question that every devotee should be asking themselves. We should not be, you know, cowering under some fear that to be guided by Paramatma from within is dangerous, because, you know, it may make me too independent, and what will my guru say? Well, if your guru, I'll speak frankly, if your guru is a real guru, like Srila Prabhupada was, and Prabhupada said, my purpose is simply to bring you to that platform where you can take dictation from the Paramatma Chaitu Guru, the original guru. That's where this term monitor guru comes. This was big talk some years ago about monitor guru. Prabhupada used that himself, in reference to himself. I'm just a monitor, you know? Monitor means just one who's monitoring your spiritual life, giving you advice. Like when you're driving learning to drive. So you have the teacher, and he has his brake. You know, so he can, if you do something wrong, he can slam on the brake and stop the car. He takes over control. But he's mainly there to monitor you, to see that you're doing nicely. He wants you to learn to drive. So similarly, the spiritual master wants you to have your own individual relationship with the Lord and hear from Him. And that's when the spiritual master becomes happy, just like with Ishwara Puri and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Mahaprabhu was showing all these ecstasies from chanting Hare Krishna, Ishwara Puri didn't say, "You Sahaja, what are you doing? Did I give you permission? You nonsense rascal." No, he was very happy. "You are more advanced than I am. And this, you see, this is Vaishnava." So anyway, we're all, the first stage we want to come to is this Vasudeva Sattva platform. And then we can go onward. Prabhupada says, then the spiritual shaktis above, when the Vishuddha Sattva Jiva comes in touch with the Sandini Shakti, then he actually has the vision of the spiritual world. When the Samvit Shakti connects with him, then he becomes aware of his identity, what his role is, what his activities are in the spiritual world. And then when Tladini Shakti connects with him, then he actually enters into the blissful rasa. He shares the nectarian exchange between Radha and Krishna. But first we have to come to Vishuddha Sattva, and that simply means becoming Chetragya, seeing how we are situated now in this body. And when you come to that platform, you see whether we are, whatever color cloth we may be wearing, we all have wife. In fact, we have 11 of them. But really, the other 10 are like expansions of the one. The one, the mind is the chief. And the intelligence is actually the via media between super soul and soul. So the intelligence is like the husband, you see. And the mind is like the wife. And so, since when I walked in here, I became the subject of something, I'm going to have to, don't run away so fast, because I'm going to find out why you did this. Anyway, I was a subject of some exemplification. So I will give my own example. You know, things like astrology, numerology, which is also based on astrology, because in numerology there are 9 numbers, just like there are 9 planets in astrology. But numbers work themselves. That's the principle of numerology. Numbers have their own life, and that life is represented by the planets, beginning from Sun to Mars in the Vedic system of astronomy. So these things provide us with what's called a schema in psychology. They use this term in modern psychology. Schema means it is a picture which is never intended to be complete. It is kind of an outline line drawing, a picture, a model to help us to understand. But no one is summed up, especially not devotees. We are never summed up by an astrological reading. There are some indications, but like Prahlad Maharaj says, within the sky, what is it called? The field where the stars appear. Anyway, that field in which the calculation is made, astrologically, whatever it's called. You see, besides Jupiter and Mars and the moon, which is the center, there's also what Prahlad Maharaj calls the Krishna Graha, the planet Krishna. And that no mundane astrologer can see. And when the Krishna Graha enters into the sky of the devotee's identity, his personality, then all other planets revolve around that. So a mundane astrologer looks at your chart, he doesn't see the Krishna Graha, and he says this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that. but it doesn't mean a hill of beans. Because if you're a devotee, then your karma represented in schematic form by astronomy, astrology, is now revolving around the Krishna Graha. Krishna has taken control of your karma. So whatever happens is under his direction. And you know, that's a principle. That we, every devotee is thankful to Krishna that what bad reactions you have minimized, and good reactions I don't deserve because I'm so fallen, but by your mercy you're allowing them to come, good things in my life. So, every one of us, yes, anyway, I'm talking about, I wanted to give my own example. So, taking the schema of numerology, I'm a 2, because in numerology you only go from numbers 1 to 9. This is demonstrated in something that is called a Vedic square, which is a Vedic table of multiplication. And you can see very nicely the relationships between these numbers, which ones are in opposition. So it only deals with numbers 1 through 9. And if you go beyond like 10, that's 1. That's simply 1 plus 0. 12, that's 1 plus 2, that's 3. So then as far as beyond you go 9, you just add those numbers together until they again become the original 9. You see, 2,336, you add up, you get some number, then you add that the individual numbers together, keep adding them together till you come with one of the 9 principal numbers. So, in my case, I am a 2, but that's lunar, that's mind. So, Surya, sun, is 1, he's masculine. That stands for the intellect, the source of light. And the mind reflects the intellect, you see. That means the mind is the one that mulls it over. The intelligence comes up with some idea, and the mind takes it and mulls it over. And looks at the senses. What will the senses say about this idea? You see, just like you might get the idea suddenly. If your intelligence is very disturbed, Papa Buddhi, full of sinful desires, so you might get some wild idea. Because, as Prabhupada said, sense gratification is a form of suicide. And those who pursue sense gratification, you know, investing all of their energy into it, will very often end up as suicides. So if you suddenly get the impulse to jump out of a high window, your mind is going to take that impulse from the intelligence and say, why? You know, what's going on here? And consult with the senses. Is this a good thing? You see? And then emotionally, although your intelligence, because the intelligence sees no other way, everything's finished. In 1929, the stock market crash, famous. There were many millionaires jumping out of skyscrapers in New York because they'd look at the figure. This is pure Buddhi. They're looking at the figures coming off the ticker tape machine. And seeing them getting smaller, you know, starting with, I had $10 million, sudden, you know, then a few minutes later, now I have only $8 million, now I have only $6 million, tick, 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 now I have only $100,000, tick, 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 now I have only $50,000, tick, 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 $10,000, $5,000, zero. You see, what's the point of my life? Mm-hmm. So they opened the window and jumped out, you see. This is just one example. But then the mind may step in, you know, the mind, hey, wait a minute. I think I, in the senses, you know, if there was a way for you to jump out the window right now, we wouldn't object because you've gotten very strange right now. The rest of us don't want to go with you. And so emotions like fright, fear, you know, like that, horror, come from the mind to stop the person from committing suicide. You see, that very often is what happens. So I'm just giving, this is just an extreme way of showing the example. So just like also between husband and wife, husband may get some bright idea, and wife may stop him with some other concern, but you're not thinking about this, you're not thinking about that, you see. She reflects, you see. So as I said, I'm in 11. I'm a 2, which is, but I'm a special kind of 2, because I was born on the 11th, So it's a two of formed from two ones. So two itself is feminine. So to many people who meet me, I seem very calm and intellectual and jolly, moon-like in some way. But because I'm 11, 11 is two ones. So behind that lunar exterior, there are two suns, two suryas, which is intellect. And Surya is Raja. He is king. So depending on the one's life course, this can be very good for spiritual life, because such 11 twos are supposed to have very great insight, even ability to read. I was once told by a devotee, Ayurvedic doctor, Sri Krishna Chaitanya in Mumbai, when I stayed there a few months, he did some, my pulse and looked at my astrological chart, and he said, you're the kind of person, if you're in the room alone, in your room alone, and someone knocks at your door, you know immediately from the knock who it is and what they have on their mind. It's kind of like that. See? So anyway, point is that I find, in dealing with my, if I identify with the intellect, then in dealing with my wife, my mind. You see, my mind is a very special kind of mind too. You see, she's a kind of mind that can be together with double intellect. So she just wants to see the intellect always engaged in work. Prabhupada said, men tend to be lazy, so they should get married, and women push them to work. So the same way my mind wants to see the intellect always engaged. Otherwise, if I get lazy and I'm not busy, busy, busy reading, writing, studying, planning, as Maharaj knows, sometimes I'm all night. Sometimes I meet him at 4:30 in the morning and say, oh, I think I got to take rest for a few hours now. And I get up at 7:30 and come down here. So I'm driven like this by an insatiable, voracious, double intellect. And then I have this mind, and when she says the intellect getting lazy, as it was a while ago, there was a time when I, because of the duties I were doing, I could no longer identify them with these duties, with my intellect. And my intellect became totally disarrayed. The buddhi wasn't working as it should, and started to go into fantasy and depression and all kinds of things. And so then this mind I have, which is the associate of this type of intelligence, then she assumes three eyes, 10 arms, weapons in everyone, like Mahishasura. Because I'm becoming, Mahisha was a male with the head of a bull. So dull-headed, you see. The intelligence starts to become dull. Then my mind starts to become like one of these goddesses of destruction. And she really starts to give me trouble. And, a lot of times, it depends on the person's nature, what their main trouble will be. Of course, lust is always there as the background of everything, but lust permutates, it takes different forms. So why am I in this cloth? Because I know from my chitra, I am meant to be in the renounced order. Why? Because my main problem is actually anger. Like Lord Shiva, when he was in meditation, Kamadev came. Kamadev didn't move him by lust, but Kamadev moved him by anger, which is the frustration of lust. And Lord Shiva opened his third eye and burned Kamadev. So that's the nature of my mind. My mind becomes actually very angry when the intellect is not properly engaged. And then the principle of lust can manifest, just like anger manifests from lust denied, so similarly, lust can manifest out of anger. They go back, and they're very close. One is just a transmutation of the other. But you have to see what is in your own chitra, what you're dealing with. And when I came to know that, you know, it's a theme through my whole life, that the real problem is anger. And so that can be very good, that's actually very good in spiritual life, because it is anger or frustration that pushes one to renounce. But then, jnana vairagya, you see? In order to remain a vairagi, there must be jnana, then the intellect has to be always engaged. I've been talking to some of my dearest sannyasi godbrothers when they come through here, and they all say the same thing. They actually complain. They envy me now. One I won't mention, but he was saying, you must be leading such a good life now, because you can just sit down and read whenever you want to. You don't have to have the social role of going to grihastha's houses and, you know, eating and eating more and eating more. They keep trying to trick you into eating and sit and talk about things that you'd rather be back reading, you know, the Bhagavatam, but now you have to talk and meet children and have a, you know, plastic smile on your face and give Ashirvad blessings. This is the social role of sannyasis. Sannyasis are supposed to be indifferent. They're supposed to be on the level where none of this makes any difference to them. They can have nice food, simple food. But how many sannyasis are really on that level? You see, my honest sannyasi godbrothers that I like to talk to very often are saying, I'm not on that level either. So, Vanaprastha is actually supposed to be, according to Manu, twice as austere as a sannyasi. Because they're just getting out of it. So they have to be more extreme. So they don't go from house to house, and they don't... Of course, sometimes I get dragged to them by certain persons. Whom I'm very indebted to, so I have to go and eat a pizza or something. But I would rather not do that. And when I do these things, then the missus, in the form of my mind, she starts to become very disturbed. And she is one angry bitch, I tell you. You see? But if I'm always engaged, then she's very peaceful. And she becomes like a mirror. She reflects the things that the intellect are doing. And she's very good at that, you see. Very good at pointing out, you see. Like women do, you know. Well, this looks okay, but I don't think this is right. You know. And then the intellect goes back and does some more work and brings it back to her. Oh, okay, I like this. You see. So anyway, I'm just saying all this insanity because when I walked in here, suddenly I found myself modeling clothes for everyone. I still don't understand why. So I thought I would just, instead of modeling the body, I'd model my subtle body for you.
In other words, the principle is there is that on all levels these things are functioning. We can understand Krishna's position because otherwise we may say, oh, Krishna's not doing this, Krishna's not doing that. You know, he's not being a good male. You know, he's not taking care. But he takes care according to how you surrender. Krishna says, as you surrender, he reciprocates. So we may say, well, why did Krishna allow these things to happen? But we're saying we're going to take care. We're not surrendering to him that he has to take care. Right? Indudunuwa is just telling that story about Draupadi. And Draupadi, when they met Krishna in the forest, after they sent to the forest, Krishna came. And then after talking to everybody and that, then he was talking to Draupadi. And she was asking Krishna, why did you take so long to come? You know, I was calling. He says, well, you know, when it first came, you know, I understood you were in trouble. I came there, but then, you know, you took shelter of, you know, Bhishma Dev and Drona and this and that. Why don't they do something? So, oh, okay. So then, you know, they'll take care. Then after that, then, you know, that didn't work. Then she's, you know, herself, you know, then all the kings, and then he pulled back again. And then, you know, then Dushasana is starting to pull on the cloth. And then, you know, she herself with her own strength is going. And then only at the end when she let go and said, Krishna, then I knew, oh, now it's my turn. You know, it's like that. You know, everybody else had their shot. Now it's my turn. And then he came. So that's the principle on that. You know, so that we don't blame Krishna because we understand how he does. Then on the next level, then, as Maharaj is pointing out, is then everybody here is we're actually feminine in that we're supposed to be pleasing Krishna. He's the male. So we're supposed to be performing activities for his pleasure because that's actually what feminine does because there's no purusha in it. Then you come down to the next level, you know, because that's on the platform of the soul. We talked about God. And then we talk about the soul. And then we come down to the metaphysical, which Maharaj just explained now, is that everybody, their intelligence is the masculine principle, the mind is the feminine principle. And so then that has to be properly balanced. You know, that has to be worked out properly.
Otherwise.
Yeah, trouble. Then we bring that down to the next level, where we take the social level. And that's what I was explaining before, because the question was basically on the social level, is how would that be applied here as, you know, male-female? But then you can also expand it into, because all the rasas are in the conjugal rasa, that means the same male-female principle is there in the other rasas. Parental means you have a parent that's male. It doesn't matter it's mother or father. They're the protector, they're the maintainer, they're the, you know, they're the intelligence. And then the child is the female, you know, just the enjoying and interacting, they like, they don't like, you know, you present something, they like it, they don't like it, like that. You know, friendship, then there's there, but it's always going, one is taking prominence, the other submissive, or it goes the other way. One's telling the story, the other one's listening. You know, the other one now, you know what I'm saying, it goes back and forth. Master-servant, that's obvious, because it, again, reverses. And then neutrality is then you appreciate the great qualities. So that's the feminine, appreciation. You know, so in all spheres this applies, you know. So it's just a matter of the idea of this course is to bring out the vichar. It's a very important thing. It was just mentioned to me yesterday that it's not clear that some are under the impression that we're trying to start this course and then we're trying to wipe out anything else that anybody else does in studying. But no, that's not the idea. The idea is this is just one of the methods. This is a traditional method that we find from studying the scriptures that was very much used in the satsang, is that you have devotees and you churn what is going, you know, the scriptures. And Prabhupada mentions vichar. You look at it from different angles. Therefore, different devotees come and speak from their angle, what meant something to them, and this and that. I'll speak, Maharaj will speak, others will speak. And then you're getting this different angle. So it's one of the methods of doing. So it's just, this is what we're comfortable with, because the teacher teaches their method according to students that matches. Right? And most of our other ISKCON educational programs are using the method that's most commonly understood or practiced by most devotees from their background, which is the modern academic. In that, you come in, the teacher is telling you this, they give you their homework, they do these different things, and it's very easily related to. So a devotee can just come in, immediately slot in, get the maximum amount, and then go back to their service. You understand? So that's it's very important aspect of our society, and therefore most of our educational institutions use that, because they're working on the principle. They only have a week, or 2 weeks, or a few months, and that's it. Then you have to go back to your service. Because we're sitting in Mayapur, then we have the luxury that we're not bothered with that element. We're just here to discuss it, interact, and try to deepen our understanding of it. So for us, it's more of what is the ability to contemplate and understand oneself and how to apply this Krishna consciousness in your life. If you can do that, then the byproduct is you can preach, right? The other educational institutions are working by, we're going to give you the knowledge and tools and skills by which you can just take that knowledge and directly use it to preach. Right? Does that make sense? So the end result is the same. It's just a matter of what is the method used in the time frame. Right? Does this make some sense? So it should be very clearly understood is that we're in no way trying to undermine any of the other educational systems. Just, we have our system. This is what we do. We're happy with it. And those who, how you say?
Attending.
Those who attend? You too?
Huh?
I mean saying, and those who come? Then we're all associating. We're taking advantage of this. So it should be very clear that there's no.
Our goals are end goals also different.
Is that we want to see at the end of this course those who have attended. You see, this school has in its charter the authorization to give out degrees, but really. And you can get a degree by attending this course all the way through. First six cantos, you can get Bhakti Vaibhava, second Bhakti Vedanta. But what we really want to see is that everyone leaves this course with nishta, minimum nishta, which means unshakable faith in the Bhagavatam. So that even, you may not know it after this course, so perfectly that you quote 18,000 slokas like some pundits do in India who don't have nishta. Because after they finish their Bhagavad Saptaha, they're doing all kinds of nonsense. But nishta means above anartha nibriti, firm faith. Prabhupada said nishta means you can meet the greatest scholar, biggest mayavadi, he can talk all kinds of juggle words, and he will not move you one inch. You may not exactly know how to reply to all of his arguments because he's saying things that you're not familiar with, you know, because every philosophy has its own terminology. So there's maybe things you don't understand what he's saying. But anyway, you just know it's nonsense and it doesn't matter. Therefore, Prabhupada once said, he actually said this, a very nice quote, about his own, this I think you can appreciate from this quote, what we're trying to accomplish in this class. Prabhupada said, even our women can defeat the greatest Mayavadi philosopher in the world today. Even one of our women. You see, if Bhagavatam is being taught nicely, then even a woman can, just with a few words, defeat some big Mayavadi up in the stratosphere with all this, you know, rarefied voidistic concepts, just like a big bubble, you know? She can just put a pin into it, pop! Finished. So this is nishta, to be so confident in the face of it. This is actually, this is why we work the class as we do, because we don't want anyone to go away, although some do, but we don't want that. We don't want anyone to go away, we don't want anyone to feel this is too difficult, everyone should become a part, and by this sangha, come to nishta. And that means, that's the platform, basic platform of being a Bhagavata. See? Bhagavad nishta. And then after, by further cultivation, practice of devotional service, then ruchi, and asakti, and bhava, and prema, they will come in proper order. If there's nishta. Nishta is actually the real thing. It's because you have to get it over anartha nibriti. That's the real challenge in our spiritual life. So the goal of life is called purusha artha. This is the principle. How do you get rid of anarthas? Get the real artha. The purusha artha. The Lord. You graha. Have him. Take him. And then all the anarthas will flee. And that's anartha nivritti. That's why before anartha nivritti, what is the platform? Is bhajana kriya. You see? So bhajana kriya is the process. by which you can get the Lord. And if you get the Lord, because when Prabhupada explains these nine, he explained it very, this ninefold stages, but very practical, very simple way. He says, as soon as you take up bhajana kriya, if your service serious, then you follow the four winged principles. And this is basically anartha nivritti, right there. It may be, you know, more subtle anarthas. But as you learn more, properly situated in devotional service, as you learn more about Krishna, become more Krishna conscious, they will leave, and then you will have nishta. And this is that same Vasudev Vishuddha Satatva platform I was speaking of before. And then the ruchi, asakti, bhava, this is where you start to come, your consciousness is coming in touch with the three shaktis of the spiritual world more and more. So basically we want to come to this Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. Pure goodness means you're no longer bored. You know, chanting 16 rounds doesn't bore you anymore. No. Reading Prabhupada's books doesn't bore you anymore. Going to the temple to attend that isn't boring anymore. You see? Stitvam sattva prasidati. You get satisfaction from these activities. That's the difference between pure goodness and ordinary goodness. Ordinary goodness means there's still the touch of the other modes. That means, you know, you're going to feel sleepy chanting your japa. That's very good activity, but if you start to, you know about the different kinds of japa, dive bomber japa, and machine gun japa, and jibber japa, oh hi Prabhu, how are you doing? Oh really? Now you can do it with a cell phone. See, hold it in your left hand, bead bag in the right hand. Hare Krishna. Oh, jive, Prabhu, Hare Krishna, yes. Well, I don't think so. No, I can't come over at that time, but... Oh, really? Okay, well, maybe I will come. All right then, see you, goodbye. So, there's these different forms of... avidipurvaka japa. And this is all coming because we're actually not... on the platform of pure goodness. It's just material goodness and is affected by the other modes. So when you come to pure goodness, you actually then see your field of activities very clearly. Then you can accept your varna, for example. When I first came to know Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj many years ago, one of the most brilliant things that I ever, and I always treasure this from his mouth, his lotus mouth, was when he explained Daivi Varnashram Dharma as the varnas in the spiritual world are side by side, whereas in the material world they're vertical. See, there's a question of climbing up status. Brahmana is higher than Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. But in the spiritual world, Krishna is the center. And the varnas are just arrayed around Krishna for his service. So the Brahmanas, Krishna's a Vaishya. One of his best friends is Madhumangala, a Brahmana, who's Narada Muni. And they go hang out together in the woods. And because Brahmanas, it's really funny. It's such a funny thing. Narada Muni, Vaikuntha Narada Muni, he's a beautiful singer. But Vrindavan Madhu Mangal, who's the same person, can't sing worth a damn, but he likes to sing. So he's always singing, going with Krishna. Krishna's always... in a funny way, praising him. Oh, this is a very interesting raga you're singing today. Oh, Brahmana, oh Vipraji, my dear friend. This way they joke together. He's always singing loud voice, these strange melodies. So it's the same Narada, but you see, when we meet Narada as Narada Muni, there's this gravity, he's a sage, he's tumburu, he's beautifully singing. But in the spiritual world, there's this sort of comical, in Goloka Vrindavan, there's this sort of comical, you know, when he does this thing with his... I knew someone who could do that. It's a very rude sound. Sounds like a certain bodily function. He makes this sound, you know, gets everyone laughing. He's a big joker. So, anyway... Okay. Yes.
excellent here. So then you can after pick up the 12th chapter, and then we'll, I guess, on Monday continue the questions and then finish up.
Don't go anywhere. Srila
Prabhupada ki. Salve Vita Bhakta Vrinda ki. Jai Jai Gaur.